Are they going to increase our capacity too at the same time, or?
The way it works is, and truly, this Mayor Kovac is very much more expert than I am. If you go to the website, you'll find that there is a small amount of water available. They publish that, I think, quarterly on their website.
Right.
So, but in summertime, you know, when people are watering and, you know, we don't have nearly as much rain as we had this year.
Right.
You know, the supply gets tight, so they'll enact those kinds of measures to slow the use. In the wintertime, it's, I'm sure, not that much of a problem. But when you look across the year, they still have a small amount of capacity available. I haven't looked lately, but, you know, it's in the 17,000-25,000 gallon per day range. It's not a lot.
Right.
And that's why water, in my view at least, is a pretty critical variable. We always focus on sewer out of habit, but
right.
I got the feeling that water is a bit tighter, to tell you that.
I know it has been over
yeah.
the years.
Yeah.
So in your conceptual layout of this development, you don't actually know where the curb cuts are lining up at this point?
Our intent was to have them line up with the streets, the current streets. I have one full-scale print. And I wanted to say, from what I see on this, and I've looked at it a dozen times.
I can't see the opposite side of the room.
Right.
I can see one.
Well, that's the one.
And
this one's not.
This one I can't tell.
No, there's no road up here. This is it here.
Okay. Ah,
so
all right. Yeah, one of them does. The other one is far away from the nearest street, so that, yeah. that goes out separate.
Okay. And there was no consideration of actually having it not come out on St. Ledger, but maybe Alton and Country Club?
You can't go to Alton because there is two situations. There is that water protection buffer on the north. That's 2 acres.
Okay.
And then on the south, I don't know if many people know this, there's a one-acre lot owned by the golf course.
Okay.
You know, Country Club Drive, this one-acre lot, which is 50 feet wide,
right.
and their property begins. So,
regardless,
okay.
that's not an issue that
never was
yeah.
being addressed in the zoning ordinance.
Correct.
That's
right.
That would come up during the site
correct.
Plan.
Correct.
During the site plan. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Sure.
That'd be great. Just the question. As long as we can't see them, you know.
Those will be the details.
Good evening. I'm Wanda O'Connor. And I live over on Springfield Drive in Fairways. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you and for the information that was put out to each and every one of us this evening. Just wanted to get a little clarification. So all the proposed projects that you have on the table are all subject to the availability of water and sewer. Correct. Do we have any commitments for any of those projects just yet?
100% affordable projects. Certain of them have commitments.
Yeah.
Okay. So the
I think they all have commitments at this point.
Well,
maybe
the only thing we don't have is a water on LeCompte.
Yeah.
Water is Clinton has a very specific ordinance, and until application is made there, it's difficult to get a firm commitment. But they know that, you know, we need it.
How much water and sewer can they supply? Can they take care of themselves yet continue to supply us for all our low to moderate income housing in the near future?
That's a question that we can't answer, this body can't answer, but I would pose that in some way to Rich Phelan or your, you know, Mayor Kovac.
Okay.
Rich is very knowledgeable of their capacities, and certainly Janice's as well. We have enough for 2 out of 3 100%ers,
mm-hmm.
and as soon as the LeCompte proposition is in a position to apply, conforming to their ordinance, we'll make sure to do that.
Okay.
And their ordinance gives priority to 100% municipally sponsored affordable housing projects. So we have a little bit of a plus there. Plus, our agreement ensures that from our township perspective, that LeConte project comes first.
And do we put notice out to the residents of our town that we are looking for low to moderate income housing rentals? Have we asked the community at all?
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that someone might have a unit that they may want to consider using for a low to moderate income rental. I mean, we did that in Franklin Township in Pittstown, you know, it's when I sat on the committee there. So it's, you know, we put that out. And we did have responses, though. And we also sent some of our housing to New Brunswick, to Frenchtown.
We almost did Frenchtown. Yeah. The law changed before we got there.
We have some units throughout the township that are deed restricted that I believe are scattered about.
Theoretically, it could be done, but what would be the economic incentive to do that without, you know, for a private, say I own even a single family home, two or three family home, what would be the incentive to do that? There would need to be some money coming from somewhere.
We have large numbers. I mean, 337 is not 1,000, but it's still the kind of number you need a real development. We do have, as Brian mentioned, three units on West Main Street near High Bridge that the county rehabbed, and we've got some group home bedrooms that count. But, you know, going out and trying to find onesie-twosies isn't a big help.
So was your question about people who live in town, whether or not they'll be able to occupy those units?
No, that they might be able, the people who own property might be able to
deed restrict the
To rental low to moderate income.
To knock down.
You know, so that you would get some credits
maybe these 24 units wouldn't be needed in all the place.
Right.
Theoretically, yes, but again, I don't know what.
Practically,
there would need to be an incentive.
Right. And it's hard to get a judge to approve. Mm.
Well, they would deed restrict their private property to do that and would be getting lower income.
If we approach the court with saying we'd find 20 units or some number like that, the judge would kind of laugh us out of there. It would need to be in hand at that point.
You couldn't plan for them, let's say. Yeah. It would have to be tangible.
Anything's possible.
There is a mechanism called accessory apartments. You could get up to 10 credits, and you could convert, let's say, a garage to a unit, but that's not even enough to get us there.
Yeah, and there's, like you said, there's a limit.
Yeah. It creates other issues, and it's contrary to the zoning.
It was worth asking to see if
absolutely.
Now, would a senior housing project fall into our low to moderate income housing?
If economically feasible, it would. And I think there's been some talk of maybe some veterans affordable if we can get it.
Yeah, you know, at Headley Farm, there's going to be a variety of different kinds of structures and types. So I think that's probably the one that, as Brian said, you know, maybe veterans, maybe age restricted. You can age restrict up to only 25% of the units, though. Mm-hmm. So there is a stop there.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I thank each and every one of you for your time.
Thank you for
being able to ask the questions.
Okay, we have a few ordinances beyond this one. Are there some final questions? Come on up. It's 10 o'clock and...
I don't have a question.
Yeah.
Before I want to show you something. We were talking about Christina Van den Bodenberg of Critical School.
Can we have your name, please?
I'm sorry, what was your name again?
Christina Van den Bodenberg. This is the house. This is
there's your driveway. I missed that.
That's the driveway here. Yeah. This is marked as Westgate Drive. That's not Westgate, right?
It's not a street.
That is whatever.
It's a driveway.
Exactly. So they are coming out right here.
Ah, okay.
So it's kind of a right angle, and when you come from up here, you come up the hill, and it kind of levels out for you.
Mm-hmm.
then here over here, you said that you could put it in access because there's a
lot.
This is
a lot.
This is a concern. I think that would be an issue that would be addressed during the planning board.
Yeah.
Then that you could maybe put on that it is an issue because
The zoning ordinance, for instance, doesn't dictate where the access points would be. Yeah. That's something that the planning board would review, and they would precisely take in these kinds of considerations. Is it a safe location? Is it workable? What's the impact?
I appreciate it. You know, that can get, we can move that around a little bit. I think that's easy.
Anyone else?
Going, not quite gone. Can we have your name?
No, it won't be able to be considered for the public hearing.
I mean, you can certainly do it, but it won't be part of the public hearing record for this. It would just be...
Oh, yeah, you send them in.
All our email addresses are online.
Hello, people.
No problem.
And I want to do to meet my family. I would have been patiently sitting here and taken all of this in.
Thank you so much.
But we have views of our own.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
You're very welcome.
And thank you for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, let me close the public hearing on this project. Since we have two projects under one ordinance, I guess we should now continue the public hearing, or
should we just make sure there's no AH7 questions?
Pardon?
Just make sure there's no AH7 questions and then vote.
So the AH7 being the regulations for LeConte.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, because it's all one ordinance. Yeah. We're going to adopt them together. Mm-hmm. But yes, is there anyone in the public who has questions or comments about the regulations for the LeConte site, which are the AH7 regulations?
Okay.
All right. So we will close the public hearing then. Okay. Any comments or concerns on the part of council having heard?
I think that was a valuable exercise for the community. Mm-hmm. I agree. Maybe if we did it earlier, it might have alleviated some fears and angst some of these people had. But I think it was a great education.
Okay.
At the stage in which we are in, to not fulfill the developer's agreement that we've got with the court would be... The settlement agreement that we have with the court would be very detrimental to the township. So I think we have to move forward with zoning ordinance. Mm-hmm. And I think that this zoning ordinance addresses most of the concerns that I have, and then the balance will need to be addressed at the planning board.
Yeah. I think Brian said it well. I feel the same way. So I will make a motion to approve the zoning ordinance with the comments made by the planning board and the latest small adjustments, the property boundary line and whatnot.
Okay, so, I don't mean to cut you off. So please. Just for clarity, so that would be the proposed revisions that are shown on the redlined Exhibit A to Ordinance, what number are we? 1120-18, okay. I believe.
I'll second that, John.
Okay, yeah, 1122-18.
Councilwoman Switler?
Oh, yes. No, excuse me.
Councilman Kochanowski?
Yes.
Councilman Malloy?
Yes.
Mayor Higgins?
Yes, and... I thank everybody for being, for a well-reasoned and well-disciplined Q&A session. So thank you for that.
Very constructive.
We may have disappointed folks, but we, as Brian said, I think nicely, we're at the point where we it's very difficult to back up at this point. It would be well-nigh impossible. So having said that, let's move on to Marukian.
Can we do Headley first?
All right. Sure. Better idea.
We're trying to help you out.
Okay. Headley is, let's see. I'll read the ordinance by title. This is Ordinance 1121-18, an ordinance of the Township of Clinton, further amending Chapter 165 of the Code of the Township of Clinton by creating the AH-8 Affordable Housing Zoning District to facilitate an inclusionary affordable housing development on the Headley Farm Estate, Block 46, Lots 33 and 33.01, and amending the Clinton Township zoning map and schedule of zoning requirements accordingly. So this is the 400-unit inclusionary development with a 26% set-aside proposed for these two parcels above the Annandale train station. And as previous with the previous two, the Planning Board has made some similar recommendations. But should we open the public hearing? Okay. So let's open the public hearing, and I'll make a statement up front. This is a large project for our township. 400 units is about 9%, 8% of the total housing stock of the township. We earnestly want to get this thing right. It's got many different building types and sizes, and at this point in time, I think there are still some changes that would be in order. We have not yet determined whether these changes are material or not. So what I'm proposing to council is that we table this for this evening and work between now and the next council meeting to determine whether to go through this very, very carefully, make sure there's no – make sure everything is lined out and this thing is perfect as opposed to where we are now. It's not perfect enough for me. If there are minor changes and adjustments, we'll have a public hearing at the next meeting and consider this and potentially approve it. If there are substantive changes to the ordinance as written, we will vote to not approve the ordinance and introduce another ordinance with these changes incorporated on first reading. That would be the plan.
And we'll have the public hearing, and it's possible that comments, questions, and concerns raised during that will affect some of the changes that will.
Correct.
Should we make some ordinance concern questions at this point?
Oh, absolutely.
I just wanted to say up front,
okay,
Here's where we are. So
we legally have to have the public hearing, but.
So if anything, it buys you more time.
Correct.
When is the next public hearing? The dates?
2 weeks from today, the next council meeting.
I'm sorry?
That's the next council meeting. That's not necessarily the next hearing on this.
What's the next hearing on this?
The next hearing on this ordinance, we're tabling this ordinance as written, okay? So that allows us to sort of continue the public hearing to the next meeting.
Which is the 26th of September?
That's correct. So correct. It would, yes, the public hearing.
Yes.
26th. And at that point in time, we can't, you know, it's like the
time
hasn't passed. If we have only minor adjustments, we can vote on it. If we have major adjustments, then we have to basically reject it. And then I would hope by that point in time we would have the improved version and we would introduce a new ordinance.
Right. But they can make comments now.
And they can make comments now. Yeah. They'd be able to make comments.
Particularly if we're going to.
So we'd like to hear those comments now.
You want to hear comments?
I understand you're not understanding what we're saying. We want to hear the comments now.
Definitely.
Okay.
Not wait until 2 weeks.
Okay.
And you're welcome to come back in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I'll be here.
Yeah.
I'm Paul Bogart. I've lived in Clinton Township for 42 years. On my property for 46 years. My property is block 46, lot 48. The Headley Farm are my neighbors to the east. They are my
Possum?
Neighbors to the south.
Are you on Possum?
Yes. Okay. I have a
a lot of heartburn over this project, needless to say. I read on the thing that was sent in registered mail here, they're going to possibly have their own sewage plant. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Where would that sewage plant be located?
At this point, we can't tell you that. We don't have a site plan or a plot plan.
Okay.
They'd have to find the PERC. They'd have to get the permits, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I can hardly wait for that one. Next question is the infrastructure in and out of that area. You come out of that area and you're on Reformatory Road.
That's correct.
That leads into Petticoat Lane Road, which leads into the stoplight on US 22. I have just one quick question. I'm not trying to belittle anybody here, believe me, when I ask this question. Of the four of you that vote, has any of you been on this property physically in the last 5 years?
Yes.
Very frequently.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And every road that leads to 22, I take 5 times a day at least.
Okay. With neighbors.
This is my backyard.
We go petticoat all the time.
That helps me because I feel like you'd be much better informed. The road is not good, especially Reformatory Road, for if you put 400 units in.
These people have actually done a preliminary traffic study, and I think there's at least one curve on Reformatory that needs some redoing. And at least yours truly would insist on a right-hand turn lane at Petticoat and 22.
How about the width of the road? How about the structure of the road?
The their traffic engineer and traffic engineers sometimes you take what they say with a grain of salt. It's a mysterious science for some of us other engineers. But the traffic engineer opined that the road was satisfactory with some minor, what appeared to me to be some relatively minor improvements.
What do you think of the road for that type of traffic?
Reformatory?
Yeah, Reformatory Road.
Yeah, I don't think anything is perfect at this stage, but it would have to get there. It would have to pass a lot of tests.
East Main Street, that road they would come out on.
We have to do one at a time.
Yeah. It's okay. Well, I'm assuming that most of the people would probably not go to High Bridge, but would probably go to US 22 via that route.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that would be part of the traffic study. Again, they did a preliminary because it's such a big development. We all said, you have to educate us on this, right? Yeah. So it's not a finished product, but it you know, kind of passes the sniff test or whatever you want to call it. You know, it's not completely out to lunch. Some improvements are needed. Obviously, at the juncture, how many times have we sat behind a car at Petticoat and 22 sits in the middle of the road.
And I want to take a right.
Right. It drives me mad.
Yeah.
You know, so
I've done that same thing.
Yeah, I thought you might have.
Yeah. Okay. I can't imagine what impact this would have on our community. I know that you're against a hard place and a rock wall there, but what if you put this number of people in that area? What's going to happen to the school system?
You probably said the same thing when they built Hook Mountain or Beaverbrook, if you've lived here that long, right?
Well, I wasn't involved with Hook Mountain or nor was I.
No, but I'm saying, you know, the development over the years, people always had that same concern, and we've seemed to manage.
Let me try to help a little bit. Current population of the school system is down in the 1,100 range. It peaked. All of my kids went through the public school system. It peaked at 1,800. The capacity of the four buildings currently is over 2,000, and we have 1,100 in there. So what was a real issue in the 80s and 90s when we were building single-family houses like nobody's business was exactly that. Now, you know, we've got houses that take a long time to sell, you know, larger homes in particular. Apartments seem to be preferred. And we no longer have a school physical capacity problem. You'd have to add some teachers, I'm sure. But I think it's highly unlikely we would impact the actual physical part of the school.
No new schools
to
be built.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that may be one reason. I don't know in the heart of hearts what the reasoning is of the Board of Ed, but that may be one reason why they chose to sort of, you know, quote unquote, close Spruce Run, but not really close it. It's still going to be there. So maybe they're hedging their bets.
Okay, thank you for your time. I appreciate your service.
Sure, thank you.
Thank you.
Please, come on up.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm Elizabeth Lupo. I live at 8 Main Street, and I have some concerns, and my husband also has some concerns that he will bring.
Main Street in Annandale?
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure.
I live just beyond the train station, and my property also abuts the Headley Farm.
Got it.
Property.
So you're above the station.
We're above the station.
And the old Headley property?
What?
The Headley property?
Our home was owned by Phil Headley.
Yeah.
Who passed away, I think, in 2012, and his wife sold us the property. So we're familiar with the property. We're familiar with, you know, what CRC said when they said that they were attempting to sell it to, you know, 21 homes, and there are going to be multi-million-dollar homes, they kept telling us. And we were like, who's going to want to live, what millionaire is going to want to live next to a jail? Come on. Like, that's what we said from the beginning. What millionaire is going to want to live?
I think we could agree on the answer to that question.
What?
I think everybody could agree on the answer to that question.
But how are you going to convince 300 market-rate people to move next to a jail?
It is.
It's the builder's.
I know that's the builder's concern, but I think as a town we should be concerned. Like, they had zero interest. They had a lot of different scenarios that they were, like, I think trying to, like, put out there, and they had very little interest. I mean, you not only have the, you know, great neighbors of the jail, but you also have, like, you see, like, the waste management, and you see, like, the building of Exxon, and you look over 78, which is also, like, you know, there is also some beautiful views up there, but there's so many things up there. Also, you have the electricity lines running through.
Well, yeah.
So it's such a crazy piece of property.
Not a real estate agent.
He was trying to build those big homes. I think that was about the time the economy was taking its
toll.
Well, and that goes back to the mayor's point before, which is that the big homes, doesn't matter where they are in the township, they really are not selling it.
Yeah.
Of course. But, I mean, at no point, from my understanding of real estate in Annandale, particularly, were there like $2 or $3 million homes that were for sale? And that's what they kept telling us. And we're like, this doesn't make any sense. But
what I would say in answer to your question is they did a detailed economic study by a fairly prominent firm, if I remember, it's the Otau Group. And part of
you know how to spell that?
O-T-T-E-A-U.
O-T-T-E-A-U. E-A-U.
I might be off by a letter or two, but it'll get you close. Pardon?
Otto, he's a real estate expert.
There you go. And part of the market study was an uptake study. And so for what it's worth, I mean, my guess, okay, we have a one remaining sort of controversy with them, you know, besides tidying up the actual zoning ordinance, and that's the phasing requirements. This thing would be built in phases, I think, logically. So, you know, they would get some experience and then go further, get some experience, go further. So the economic study seemed to indicate that there was demand, not for the million-dollar houses, but, you know, nice townhouses. The prison isn't awful. It's
a bunch of
cornfields.
As far as prisons go, it is nice, but I mean, there are gang members that are, you know, just one step away from your door should anything happen.
But the guys in orange uniforms, so you give them.
They maintain the property very nicely.
Bucolic.
It is still, though, you know, the optics of it. So.
No, I hear you.
So that's one thing. The other thing is, I'm losing my train of thought here. We've been
lost my kidney.
But I have some concerns about the actual language of the ordinance, and I was just wondering if we could kind of go over some of the open space issues that are laid out at 165-155.34. Currently, Annandale Village has very little open space. There are children that play in the train station parking lot just about every day that I'm driving home. I pass someone who's either playing on West Street with their gun, like little play guns or whatever, or throwing lacrosse balls against the wall of the Village Green. And I understand that they're saying that they're going to put at least 30% of the property reserved for open space, but then it says that space may consist of wetlands or other environmentally constrained land. I have a problem with that because if you're adding 400 new homes, you've got to expect that there's got to be some place for the children to have some.
There will be recreation.
And I see that that's laid out there, too, but it says at least 30% of the property reserved for open space. The open space may consist of wetlands, and there's no definitive amount that's laid out for those wetlands. And I think that this paragraph should be better constructed so that they don't have all the open space be this environmentally constrained land. There's a lot of, there's a lot of flat space within that development, but there's also a lot of land, and I've walked most of that property. There's a lot of property that wouldn't be desirable for child playing that they could make be their open space, basically.
Right. Well, reserving open space is one thing, and at least to me, providing recreational amenities is another. So we will see what they provide in terms of recreational amenities, where it's situated and how large it is.
Are those recreational amenities going to be restricted to the people who live in that area? Because with the development of Fox Seals and the Village Green at Annandale, you're creating a lot more space, a lot more residential space without considering that there are children playing in the train station currently.
I can't answer that. That is the kind of bargain that's struck at the planning board.
Okay.
You know, open space could be owned by a homeowners association, as in my development, and held privately. It could be given to the town and held by the town, in which case the public.
Right.
But
so
that's always a bargaining point or a discussion point at the planning board.
If it would be possible to revisit that paragraph to make it so that the developer has more obligations, I think that would be beneficial. So the other one that I have a problem with is 165-155.35. Both G and I think, are a little troubling. I think it's crazy to take an area that's all small homes and big homes that it's surrounded by and be putting like a 54-unit building or even a 48-unit building. It doesn't conform with anything else that's really in the area.
Actually, it does. We've measured the some of the buildings at the Muse, and they're about the same size.
The Muse is kind of, I guess you would say that that's close, but.
Yeah, it is. it's on the periphery of the village.
Okay. The Muse is such an eyesore. I mean, I would hate to see more of that, personally.
I know that's not for this discussion here, but
also the building height exceeding 3.5 stories, that's another, not to exceed 3.5 stories. I don't think it should be higher than 2 stories. I don't think the Muse has more than 2 stories, does it?
Their garage unders, they're 3.
Their garage, three. But their garage unders with 2 above them, I believe.
2 floors above, 3 stories.
Okay. So,
in fact, my daughter has an apartment like that.
Sorry?
My daughter lives over in the Muse. Just,
I mean, I don't think it's a bad place to live. I think it's ugly, but it doesn't seem like a bad place to live.
We're not going to argue that. It's really, really dense and sort of graceless.
Another concern is the 165-155.41 Part B. At the developer's option, low and moderate income housing units may be constructed in separate buildings or may be constructed within buildings which include market rate units. I think if we're trying to create this like vision that you guys had before, they shouldn't have the ability to make the decision if it's in or out, because I think they'll probably just keep it separate. And
is that statutory?
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Repeat the question one more time.
Is that a statutory requirement?
In terms of the distribution of affordable?
Yeah.
They can be. The one requirement is that they remain on site, but whether or not they have to be in the same building or a different building, I don't think.
Well, when it's a multi-unit dwelling.
I think it's unusual to have. Okay, you've got. You have a situation on Alton Place, which is fairly unique. I'm not used to seeing, it happens around the state, but I'm not used to seeing market rate and affordable units in a single apartment building. That is atypical.
But that's what New Jersey is trying to move towards, from what I understand.
They want to integrate affordable units within a,
and I think
within a municipality, not a building necessarily.
No, I think, sorry, I don't mean to quarrel with you, no, but there's definitely a preference within state law.
There is.
To have the affordables integrated with the market rate.
Absolutely,
units.
It's a policy issue.
But developers are allowed for management and other reasons to cluster the units in their own building, even though there is definitely in the law expressed a strong preference for scattering the units among the market rate units so that you don't have them segregated, but you are allowed.
I would just ask that if you guys could revisit that section, it would be, I think, in the benefit of the whole development. I mean, to have that development fail would be grotesque, you know? Just, if it's going to happen, and I'd like it not to happen, obviously, but I don't think I can stop it. But if I can make it better, I would like to do that.
That's why we're taking this interregnum.
And also, the applicability and waivers, the part B of that 165-155.42B, the planning board may waive any engineering or construction design requirement contained in this article to achieve the objectives provided. Such waiver does not jeopardize public health and safety. That's like way too broad. Like, what if these developers become the next board members and they just decide to change everything and make it how they want to do it? I mean, it's like, but like, you know, it's, I know you guys are residents and citizens, and I don't know that you guys will be here later. So, you know, it's far too broad to allow for every and any engineering and construction design requirement to be, deleted just to achieve this AH8. Like, it's important to get this done correctly, and that's just too broad. So those are my comments on ordinance. I had a question. 165-155.32, part B says, impacts to site-specific documented critical habitat shall be minimized. What is this critical habitat that's mentioned there?
I don't know if this is anything specific.
Well, they haven't done a complete environmental review. There is a stream that is the headwaters of a C1 stream, but it's not, the water quality is not C1 that goes through the periphery of that property. They may be talking about that.
Okay.
It may speak to that, but until you get an environmental study, you don't know if in fact there is any critical habitat.
Okay. I was just wondering if there was something specific.
Yeah, I mean, there's some water features on both the east and west side there, and the east side is at the waters.
Just one other comment to make about the building there and everything. Like I said, I live beyond the train station, and we live up the road. That road is currently supposed to only be used by people who live on that side of the track. That's, I think it's 4, 6, and 8 Main Street, and we have so much trespassing that goes on currently that while you say it would be an emergency access road only, I don't see how that would be an enforceable thing. I know there are possibly ways to make it so that only an emergency vehicle can get up there, but I think it could be a very slippery slope. And
you know, I just have a personal problem with, and you know, we'll have to see how this comes out. This is my opinion. It doesn't necessarily represent the planning board or the council's opinion, but if we have affordable units up there, you're not going to walk to jobs from that development. You can, on the other hand, hop a train and end up going to Raritan or Somerville with some reasonable expectation that you will find a job that you can make a living at.
Have you ever, do you take that train now?
Yes, I've taken that fairly frequently.
I used to take
That's why I'm saying Somerville and Raritan, not New York.
Newark, even is.
No, it's the Tinkertown trolley going out that way.
It's insane how long it takes.
Yeah, I agree. But at least those towns, I think, they're close enough, the fares are low enough, and, you know, if we're going to have 104 affordable units up there, I personally would like to see that walkable.
I would like to see that too. I just don't think it's actually really feasible unless they built a totally different plan than what they, the plats are totally different than what they've already described. Oh. Because to walk from the train station all the way up that hill and then walk, it's quite a distance and it is like a sizable hill. So, beyond that part of it, my point is people drive up my driveway at 35 miles an hour thinking it's a road, and I have a daughter. You know, I have a one-year-old who I don't want to feel like I'm worried that someone thinks my driveway is a street.
Yeah.
And that this is a problem currently, and I just don't see that changing for the better now that we have more stuff going on.
We'd have to put in measures that would ensure it's pedestrians and only in the case of an emergency. And we're sensitive about the emergency because, you know, you come out of Annandale Hose, you go out to Route 22, you make a left at Petticoat eventually, you go up Reformatory, then you go up their flag onto the property. And with 400 units up there, it's my personal opinion, yet to be argued out at Planning Board, that we should provide much faster access to the fire department. And we'll see how it comes out. That'll be a Planning Board kind of a discussion. I may not even be a member of the Planning Board at that time, so who knows.
How often do people drive up your road?
Two or three times a day. Not road, my driveway. Two or three times a day. And my husband has put all these signs that make us look like crazy people across the high road.
I would do the same thing.
Private drive, private drive. Do you know, we have private drive.
There's eight signs.
And we still have two people drive up our driveway. And they don't drive up like, I made a wrong turn, and I'm just trying to turn around. They're like, people have like been like, where's the farm?
Find out
yeah.
And drive.
They're like, and if our driveway is not like that nice, like it's.
And people have asked me where the development is.
So it's like, it's just crazy. It's pretty crazy.
They drive up there because there's nothing to prevent them from going up.
First of all, the stop sign is missing. On the train tracks, the stop sign is missing.
Oh, that's something we can look at.
Someone knocked it over, and no one takes care of it.
I talked to one of the Department of Water guys. They were there cleaning the fire hydrants out, and I talked to them and told them they didn't do anything. They didn't do
that's not going to help.
They're from Clinton Town.
Okay, and if we can get like a bigger formal no. Like private crossing or some kind of sign out there, that would be really appreciated.
I mean, there have been people that get their cars stuck.
A tractor trailer got stuck in our yard.
Yeah, that was last year. What? And then the year before that, around Halloween, a kid was trying to get to the haunted house in Clinton, which I guess is on Main Street, maybe, and he got stuck while the train was still running. Yeah, it's like, it's insane. It's total madness. The train station is total madness. I want to prevent any more madness.
Yeah, but I'd like to try to fix some of it now.
Yeah.
I would love to fix it. Like, and I'm saying, if all of these things were fixed, I would it would be okay. Like, there are major issues in that area currently that need to be fixed before the council decides to put 400 new homes
Do you think, I can't remember if there's a barrier, you know, when you go up that flag, past your place, is there a barrier before you get to the built-out roads, the cul-de-sacs?
Yes.
There is.
Well,
and they still.
I've spoke with a farmer a couple years ago. The road used to go up, or 90, used to be two, not, so there's two former buildings.
I'll show you what they did. So, this is my property here. This is my property here, okay?
Here.
And this is the root. And it goes like this and like that.
Oh, yeah. Better.
Yeah. So, as you see, first of all, our property goes to, this is the current train station. Mm-hmm. Our property is the actual train crossing.
Yeah.
No one has addressed us about anything about these crossings or anything like that. I'm okay with giving access to the to our neighbors. So, first of all, the crossing grows into our property. So, that needs to be addressed. That's one addressed. Yeah. These are former buildings that are currently destroyed. The road is, you know, you said you walked it. However, when you get to the top here, you do cut through our property. The road used to follow the supply lines up to the roads in the
gotcha.
And the farmer was nice enough that he did create the road along the.
Double back to this after.
Yeah,
okay, good idea.
Get back into the.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
So those are my.
That's something I want to talk about.
Yeah.
You can talk about your.
I'd love to get a copy of the darn thing.
Absolutely.
All right. So. Anybody else have any comments about this?
Oh, sorry. Just continuing on my wife's point, Ryan Lugo, 8 Main Street. Sorry about that. She covered most of our concerns. However, I did discover one thing. The council cannot even vote on this. There is a pending ordinance, and in accordance with New Jersey Statute 40.55D49, the state that general terms and conditions on which the primary approval of that property was granted shall not be changed until it's executed. And I know that I just probably dropped the bombshell on y'all.
No, not at all.
Or am I in the wrong?
Well, what that provision that you're referring to is what gives developers what we call vested rights. So if they receive a preliminary approval for 3 years, they're protected against any zoning changes. So even if the council decides to change the zoning, their approved project can still go forward within a certain window.
Yes, and they are granted through 2020. So the zoning cannot be changed until 2020.
Well, the zoning can be changed, but whatever their approval is can be built despite the fact that the zoning changed. Now, in this case, they're actually asking for the zoning to change, but the point is, even if they weren't, you can change the zoning. They're just grandfathered in, as it were, for a certain period of time. I mean, that's the simplest way to explain the vesting.
They turn into a legally created nonconforming?
No, it's just that they're grandfathered.
They're grandfathered.
But, I mean after they're built. Anyway, I'll leave it.
Yeah, if the use is, yes, if they yes, after they're built, they can be.
Because the use went from less restrictive to more restrictive use. It went from R1 to rural conservation. So, town was already moving towards making that area a conservation area. Look at the seal of the town. I don't see
it changed
100 houses on there. I see a barn, a tractor.
It changed from 5 to 9 acres in that area. That's correct.
Yep.
So, I mean, the town was already going and keep trying to keep that as an open space. I don't know. I understand that you're between the rock and the hard place on the on this affordable housing, and that looks like a good place. But, I mean, just as the town goes, I mean, it's not even keeping with what the town seal looks like. Then, in my closing, I would like that you, every time that you refer to this, to the Headley Estates, to stop referring to the train station, as we've discussed, and we'll discuss after the meeting about the issues on our property. We have been receiving a lot of traffic that has come up and says, oh, just wanted to see where the development's at, which, and we've discussed about the driveway. And also, the railroad crossing is a private crossing at this time. Making that a public crossing requires massive changes in accordance with the Federal Highway Administration's Railroad Crossing Handbook. So, I mean, I don't know if they've looked at that. I understand that's probably more of a planning board and more of a zoning than this. However, these are issues that have not been addressed, and also that the council should continue to take into advisement and understand that they're got to work for the town and not for the people that are coming into it. So thank you.
I saw someone else had a question.
John Wood, 1118 Possum Hollow. Paul said a few things about where we are. You know, we bought up there based on knowing that Headley was going to be 21 house approved subdivision. And we have amazing views. Like, I don't want the Muse built up to my property line. So I know when Tom laid out a bunch of these plans for how things are supposed to look, do you guys have any say as to, like, layout of these proposed properties when it comes to aesthetics or anything like that?
Yes.
Yep. I mean, if I looked at, you know, the outline of the Headley Estate, you know, there's a wooded area.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the suggestion should be, so it doesn't ruin our property values, which 100% it is going to, if they're building, you know, rental houses right there, right below our everybody on Possum Hollow. I mean, our whole value is based on our views and our houses. So
the rough, and again, it's very, very conceptual at this point. The rough, they're trying to keep the structures around the existing cul-de-sacs and roadway network. So it tends to pull it further to the south.
Yeah, I mean, you know, ultimately we don't want it done, but.
And we also have a buffer requirement, and they've actually had our landscape guy, Brian Bosenberg, out there, gosh, a few weeks ago, to talk about, okay, how do we screen it, you know, and there are some suggestions about planting, where you might plant conifers so that they're still screening during the wintertime when the foliage is off the deciduous trees. So they're starting to look at those considerations, which they will have to present to the planning board.
You're all responsible for these different changes in zoning, some other things they do. So, they go from 21 to 400 units. I'm assuming that those proposals you have to decide on and go, we think it's a good idea. Why wasn't it yet? Yeah, we need 100 inclusive and 100 other. How do we get to 400? And I am in real estate. 800 cars minimum is going to be a huge impact on 22. I mean, I don't know who they hired to do traffic studies, but 800 to 1,000 cars on 400 units, it's significant. Significant to the town, to everything. Somebody mentioned, you know, you guys are public servants. You're here during your tenure, but this is going to – you're ultimately not going to be here, and we're going to be left with this huge, hideous dinosaur of a place.
This is not – this particular development is not a happy choice. We're faced with Hobson's choices or a Hobson's choice. You take the least worst or the one you think will impact the township to the least possible degree while preventing worse things from happening. So it was a tough one for us to swallow, but we did not feel we had a better alternative for the township at large. This one has some problems. Traffic, obviously, certainly is one. And to me, that's the major one. So that's why we asked them to do a quick traffic study.
And Mayor, you mentioned that you're waiting for CRC on like their design if they're going to have an included septic facility, water. You know, you said you're waiting on their decision. I know from your time frame. You know, I just hear things like when you mentioned Franklin Township doesn't have to do any of this because they have no infrastructure.
Alexandria.
So if we don't have the current infrastructure, how are we still getting up to this 3-something number? How is it assumed that we have to create it?
The infrastructure, there's an 8-inch water main that runs onto the property. And you were probably at the planning board hearing on the new lift station down there on Dewey. So the infrastructure is adjacent to the property. We do have it.
And the court's methodology for determining the total number of affordable housing units that we would have to provide actually came up with 551.
Yeah.
If you do the math. And we settled
337
before that.
I mean, you guys are pretty I used to live in Southgate, lived in the farmhouse. That was technically a dividable property. We were going to subdivide it. We were turned down because of, like, road cut, front, something ridiculous. And, you know, it was almost like a smirk because it was such a silly, you know, it was another property in there. But I still, it's, like, crazy how you can get to 400 units and say it's all right for these builders. I mean, I just, did they come in and go, yeah, we want to propose 400 units, and who thinks that's a good idea?
I just, people who are benefiting are the developers.
Yeah, I mean, they're just.
Need you.
Local realtor in the area. This has completely affected home values in our area. And if you look at the area in the Muse, Presidential Place, find out if they're even at full capacity. They're not. So we are going to have, and we are going to be looking down at empty rentals. And
yes.
Who is going to be responsible?
People are leaving
for
Clinton Township. You made a point when Beaverbrook was built, did people see this expansion? People are leaving Clinton Township. We're both realtors, and we do study this, track this. There isn't going to be 400 people filling that place.
We'll have more people leaving.
It's crazy.
From the for sales that are around. I just
no way is that going to.
What? I just sold 46 West Street, 28 East Street.
I mean, people are leaving.
Bargain basement prices.
Yeah, you're not. You know, what if this builder goes bankrupt and does the same thing in Beaverbrook because they overextended themselves with 400 units and there's no.
You know, we can't deal in the hypothetical. They've made representations to us and the judge. It's viewed as a practical thing. Obviously, you're going to phase it. So we just have to ensure it's designed well and the phasing reflects. If they do stop, that the phasing doesn't leave us with a mess. Okay, I mean, we have an obligation. We've bargained it down as low as we can. We have limited infrastructure. There aren't a lot of choices. That's
when are you expecting site plans from them there? Like, I know we don't have it yet. You don't have it. Like, when's there, you know, you're talking about this rush time. We have to meet the criteria of the judge in Somerville, but... Like, where's the site?
For the zoning. To create the opportunity. But then it's on the developer to get the sewer, the water, figure out all
the
engineering.
How about the site plan, too?
I mean, a site plan that extensive will take a long time to develop.
And
there'll be a public process.
Make a determination on how they're going to sewer and get water to the site.
Prior to.
Before they even come up with a site plan.
Wasn't CRC in some sort of, like, trouble with the planning board because they weren't doing anything with their property for such a long period of time? Like, they constantly were...
They asked for extensions.
Asking for extensions, but weren't they, like, cited or something because they didn't know?
Is that, you know, there's a certain fellow that seems to talk out of his hat about things like this. No, they've requested extensions. And honestly, because of the size of their developments, there's a specific provision in the MLUL that allows substantial extensions.
For a 20-unit...
150.
Development that they were granted extensions for like 12 years.
There are two dimensions. For one type of development, it's a 50-acre minimum, and for the other, it's 150. They meet both.
It baffles my mind that they were like, we can't build these 20 units, and like they had all these excuses and things over the time. They could have built something different there by getting variances with your board, most likely. I think they intentionally like held off on building there so they could do this.
Well, I'm not sure that that's the case. They got $2.5 million or $3 million in the ground plus the purchase price of the property. Nobody, I would think. I'll back up. I did a lot of development work for Merck, data centers, office buildings, aircraft facilities, you know, that sort of stuff. Nobody would sink that kind of money in, not expecting that they could actually sell the homes. Now, whether that was an intelligent expectation or not is another story. But they had no issues with the planning board. They had approvals. There was litigation at the time when we upzoned from 5 acres to 9. That's why they're, I wouldn't say odd numbers, but there was litigation followed by a compromise between what was allowed in the 9-acre zone and the 5-acre zone that reduced the number of units they could build. But that's simple. That's just business as far as I'm concerned. And their properties, again, are such that they are able to, the planning board is able by statute to provide a very long-term extension. So, yeah, they're no nastiness in the background I'm aware of, and I was the planning board chair for a good long time.
So there's no schedule when they have to get you
plan
that they're going to do the on-site utilities.
It could sit for years.
Yeah.
But not that long because it has to be done by 2025 or something, right?
No, it just keeps going. It just keeps going.
We'll be assigned to probably a new obligation.
Yeah.
And we'll claim... Yes. I would think that
the 104 will be part of it. I mean, that unbuilt stuff would flow over into the next period. But our rush, the only reason we want to move this forward is we have to demonstrate to the court that we're serious about the plan that we put together.
To maintain our protection.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's really, you have to, you have a deadline to show the court that you're meeting your constitutional obligation. And quite frankly, if you don't put these ordinances in place, the court is going to find that you are not meeting your constitutional obligation. And
if you didn't have these properties come up, Hadley didn't come up, they started building, and you have to go find, I mean, it's not like you can go find. Did anybody ever solicit Exxon to see if they wanted to sell farm property on 31?
Exxon will never sell. Remember, they're expanding, and again, part of my other responsibilities in my career was to run large-scale chemical plants for Merck, pharmaceutical plants. When you're handling solvents, and they're not handling, from what I'm used to, much in the way of gallonage, fuel oil and gasoline, at the most a couple of 100,000 gallons on that entire site, but it's flammable, and you want a greensward around that. Like nobody's business. If you have a problem, you don't want smoke or anything else going on to your neighbor's site. So once they chose to expand, in my opinion, that absolutely secured greensward around there, which is like having free preserve land as far as I'm concerned. But no, they'll never part. Okay. They'll never part with it.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good questions.
I got one last question.
Sure.
I know recently the land right across the street, Valley Crest and 31, the 40 acres, mm-hmm. belonged to the Methodist Church.
Correct.
Why wasn't that considered? I mean, you got a highway.
We're
right
actually
there,
we're actually using it.
That's a LeComp development.
That's 100% affordable.
Yeah.
That's reducing the total number of inclusionary units we'll need in the.
I think the church down in Allerton and 31.
It's right
here. No, it's the 40-acre parcel right here.
40 acres is right here. Yeah,
it's the town actually tried to buy. Well.
Oh, are you talking about the church?
No, the
church
down the right next door to us. Right. You were Valley Crest.
Yeah.
So he's talking about Crest. Truly Allerton.
He's talking about
that belonged to the Methodist Church.
Right in Clinton.
Yeah.
In Clinton. That's correct.
That's part of the plan. Is 100% affordable. How many units was that? 80.
89.
89 units.
Yeah. To be honest, I recommended as the planning board chair to the council at the time in about 2013 that we purchased that from the church. I spent 6 months negotiating that, and two members of council voted against it, and then LeComp bought it.
It was a really good plan.
So we had a good plan then. But I couldn't garner the votes. We had a hearing that was much less polite and just as packed as it was tonight here. It was an emotional hearing, and the council chose not to buy that property. Now we're back buying a portion of it.
Well, we're not buying it. We're using it.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Yeah, we're incorporating a portion of it.
I think there was a gentleman who wanted to ask a question in the back. Wrong? I thought I had seen a gentleman.
No?
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions.
Yeah, come on up.
Josh Worsup, I'm at 2 Williams Way on Headley Properties East. So Possum Hollow runs right next to my property there.
Okay.
So I think the majority of everything that I had has already been asked or kind of put on the table. But the only two outstanding things were back to the phasing question. If it's phased, would they be phased in percentages?
Yeah.
So if 20-some percent is targeted, the phasing would work. You know, so we wouldn't end up with basically 100% affordable built, and then they bail on the rest of the phasing.
Oh, no.
It's actually the opposite, because they haven't settled on the numbers yet. That's a different issue. But it would go something to the effect of up until you build 24 or 25% of the market rate units, you don't have to build the affordables. And once you hit that marker, whatever that marker is set at, then you have to build a certain number of affordable.
Generally, the concern is that the developer will build out all the market rate units and then not do the affordables.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the phasing requirements are usually like you
market.
Yeah, you have to build X number of affordables.
I didn't know with all the focus, obviously, on the affordable, if it was putting that first, you know, prior to going.
No, it gets phased in.
It's like a catch-up.
Kind of leapfrogs back and forth, yeah. Okay. And then on the 400 units, is there projections on the total number of, like, what the population density would be? So I know that there's one bedroom, two bedroom, three bedroom, but with all of that, is there kind of a forecast that, it's 400 units, and we think it's an extra 2,000 population?
We don't have that at this point. I mean, the nearest proxy would be trip generation rates for the traffic study, and those numbers are not stuck up in here, you know, but that would give us an approximation, I guess, of the population.
Okay.
But it's a mix of 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms, so
right.
Some won't generate too much in the way of children or population. Some will.
Yeah, because that kind of piggybacks into some of the other questions asked. Just depending on what that population forecast is or range, you know, then the impact on all the services, right? Whether it's schools, police, fire, you know, library. God knows we have enough banks in town, but all of the other things that you know we need in town, there's going to be this huge potential massive population drain, right?
Well,
on the existing services,
at least in a development like this, we touched on a pilot payment in lieu of taxes, which is really required to make a 100% project go. So they don't pay as much taxes per unit or per person as a regular home. These are full tax rates, so we should get a good rateable flow out of this. And if we have to add police or buy another fire truck or something, we should have the cash flow to enable that. And to be honest, it's kind of frustrating on Parcel 31. There are a few small lots that are developable, and we keep hearing that, like Whole Foods might think about a market, but we're not quite big enough. So who knows? You might end up with a small benefit like that.
Okay. And then other than that, it was just a lot of the common ones, right? Whether it was the 3 or 3.5 stories, size of building, especially as high as it sets, the views that we have today, even, is as low as I said in comparison, great views, right? It's like I have an apartment in Brooklyn and I moved out here for a reason. I don't want to feel like I'm back in Brooklyn,
They've offered some of what are called perspective views where you've got a light gray going through the trees and you've got a profile of the grade. It's a traditional way to understand this. They tried to fly some balloons for us and they got blown over. So that's an issue that, we're concerned about, and we want to see more of that. You certainly will see more of that before like a site plan is approved, because at this point, you can move those buildings, the taller ones, around such that they wouldn't offer such a, they wouldn't be such a standout. But we've seen a few. I think it's a little bit of comfort given where they have at this moment in time proposing the taller ones, that they're far enough south that the trees that are developed near the railroad are tall enough where we'll cover the views in most cases.
Right. Okay. And the only other thing is on the sewer and water question, there seem to be, in all the different material that's been published since December, it seems to be at least confusing for me. So there was the ordinance that was passed this evening about the bonds,
introduced,
right? And that obviously was geared towards some of what we're talking about, and obviously the 100% stuff is what it would be targeted, I'm guessing, out of the gate here. But it seems like some of the materials talking about in Annandale, their services available, yet in one, I think in that larger document, the 200-page PDF that was published, it talks about all of that responsibility is on the developer to figure out sewer and water.
For the inclusionaries, yes.
Okay.
For the 100% ones, we're sponsors, so, we try to take care of the utilities. Take care of the utility.
Okay, but in this example, that's truly 100% on the developer to go figure out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the detrimental situation in this one could be that there's a waste plant somewhere on the property. That's really kind of the worst case.
Well, it's not the most desirable. Some of our schools have on-site plants, and, they look like a ball field from the surface.
Yeah.
So some of the advanced treatment package plants are quite good, they're very good at BOD reduction and pollutant reduction, so that what ends up as effluent is not as crude as it used to be years ago.
Right.
But they're not inexpensive.
Yeah, that ends up being a competing problem, right?
That's why we're trying to figure this out.
Right. Is there a situation where they would rely on or go to some try-it well water there?
Some which?
Their well water, is that even an option?
Well, that would be, they're investigating both water and sewage, self-supply on site.
Self-supply, okay. So I have well in my place on 2 Williams Way, and let's say that it goes to full fruition, 400 you know, homes get built there, or 400 apartments, whatever, and all of a sudden I start having water issues. Now, I don't know anything about the water table and all those kinds of things, right, but we're not talking a far distance. What would happen in that case?
There is a stipulation in our development ordinances. Developments of a certain size require what are called aquifer tests. And these are intensive pumping operations.
Yep.
And our expert, hydrological expert, would knock on doors and say, folks, we'd like to take a measurement in your well.
Yep.
And it'd be on the surrounding properties. Actually, CRC had to do this up in, on their development by at the top of Cokesbury Road. And they'll pump it down like crazy, and they'll look at their drawdown, and they'll also come out and visit adjacent properties and understand the drawdown. And from that, they can forecast, using anticipated pumpage rates for, you know, the development, they can forecast, that we believe accurately, whether it's going to affect you or not.
Right.
That's an expensive proposition, but it's not required because of that for smaller developments.
In this case, it would be required.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, that's it. Thanks.
Well, underground water basically flows south to north.
Mm-hmm.
And with that being said, they're going to be south of me. What do I do? Who do I come see? Do I come see you fellas and ma'am? Or when I turn the water spigot on, nothing comes out?
Well, like I said, you know, you do the science up front. I don't know if they could require, we could require, or you would want them to include you in their water system. But, you know, we have to trust the science as best we can.
And it's if they go that route.
Correct. Correct.
Who do I come see? Who do I sue?
Yeah, we all live up on the hill on 18 Possum Hollow. They build that. Our well, potentially, I mean, I never even thought
of
that. That's a judge. But if that happens, do we sue CRC? Do we sue the town?
I'm not an attorney. I
can't
answer that.
You sue them all.
Yeah. That's usually what the attorney's going to tell you, sue everybody.
You know, that is the right answer. And whichever way the court goes, you get something, I guess, then.
That's a lot of people. A lot of water.
I understand.
I just hope my well doesn't go dry. I put my well in back 42 years ago, the fellow that, he says, you know, this well can qualify as a fire hydrant. I mean, I had so much water. But
that's not good for seniors. That's not good for us for seniors.
Well, you know, who knows whether by the time this thing actually begins to materialize out of the fog, who knows if whether Clinton Town will supplement their capacity or not. There's been talk about another well for a long time. The YMCA even has a little space on their property they would be willing to allow them to put a well in to augment their capacity. So I don't know if Clinton Town plans to do something, if they can do something in that regard. It's like I said, it's been talked about for a long time because, as was mentioned earlier tonight, summertime, there's water restrictions, you know, in the current situation. So if they do supplement their capacity, I would think that the preference would be to take the water from that main that's up on the property. So
any other? Come on up and state your name.
I'd rather not come up, but I'm I'm Sadie Burkhart. I'm with him.
I mean, 5 years.
Yeah, 16 Possum Hollow Run. I know that you have to meet your requirement for affordable housing, but the reason people moved out here, and this is probably true of whoever lives out here, was for the openness and beauty of this county. And we're just gradually losing it. And people that feel really strongly about it, they're going to move. So you might gain them, but you're gonna lose a lot of other people.
Well,
and we moved out of here for quality of life. And like I'm looking at that sign. I've been looking at that sign for 3 or 4 hours. There's a cow and a barn. And
there's a big chip in it.
The things you love about Hunterdon County.
Yeah.
And we're just gradually losing it. I don't think any of you would want to live beside this. I mean, if I had a dream, I would make that open space. I'd make it a park for Annandale, for the children.
Mm-hmm. It would be a nice park, actually.
It'd be beautiful.
There's nothing around there that's park-like, and it's so sad to see children playing in a train station parking lot on a regular basis because they have no place else to ride their bike. And the roads around that area of Annandale are so horribly kept. I can't believe Center Street, the potholes on Center Street. Like, you don't even want your kids on the streets, you know.
Well, actually, Center Street, we're waiting for some construction to get done, and then we're going to pave it. But
I'm talking about real quality of life. The reason we're out here, you know. I mean, you've got to build affordable housing. I understand people that they need housing, but how about the citizens that are already out here, you know?
I mean,
what about us? I mean, not about me, but about all the other people in the community.
It is not a happy situation.
And it's not a very good system.
No, it's not. And what happened to open space? Is that all gone? I mean,
what we did, you know, and it's no comfort to you where you're situated, but when we moved into Highlands, that really puts a giant clamp on further residential development when you're not close to pipes and sewers. And that lot is very close to both. So that's a sort of a victim, if there's any compensation at all in a general sense. We're not going to see another Hook Mountain. We're not going to see another development on Perry Street off of Cokesbury. We're not going to see many large-scale developments in the town if they got to put them on 10-acre minimum. I think it's 9.8 acres is the minimum lot size that is now sufficient in our township for a residential discharge unit, a septic system. So in sort of a global sense, when we opted in that way, it acts to preserve, I don't know, the beautiful views, south of here, off of Reservoir Road, all the way down south until you hit Reddington. Those farm fields and things aren't going to change. But unfortunately, those properties on the periphery of infrastructure are where the, you know, affordable housing development, that's the only spot that works because of the ability to build densely, which is necessary from an economic perspective. It's, you know.
So a lot there, right? That had to be approved somewhere. I mean, you guys couldn't have pushed back and said 250. Like, if they were making money on 21 houses.
We did.
300 is even a good break.
100
units is crazy.
We have a 26% set aside. That number is that high because of the total number of units. It was a prolonged discussion, prolonged negotiation, and we needed units. And to achieve that kind of a set-aside, 26% instead of – the Muse is about 15%, 15 or 16% set-aside for affordable. You know, that allowed that parcel to take care of a huge part of our obligation. So it's – and we didn't – we told you about the ones we turned down. Those were even less desirable, we think. So.
And Hadley Farm, when we first moved out here, they leased out the land for hunting purposes. It was the hunting clubs. That's pretty used to. I mean, that's good quality of life. I mean,
agreed.
Is there anyone else in the audience who wants to
yeah.
come up and make a comment or ask a question?
Okay. Let me close the public hearing on this for this evening and move on to the final.
Well, do we need to vote to carry it?
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah. So what you need to do is I need a motion to continue the public hearing to the council's September 26th meeting beginning at 7 o'clock.
I'll make a motion.
Without further notice.
I'll second.
And a roll call.
Councilwoman Swetley?
Yes.
Councilman Kaczynowski?
Yes.
MLA?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you all for staying late.
Thank you
for staying late.
You had to stay late, too.
We didn't do
Marie tonight.
Because you got to do it yet.
All right. I thought Amy's want to unplug. We have one more thing to do.
You guys can do anything you want.
Do you have an agenda?
I was out looking for a dog.
All right.
Still have another order.
Yeah.
Sam might be back by the time
Your property.
And a question.
Yeah, that
scoots over.
Where? Prison?
No.
The road, you know where the road is, right?
And this is also on the website.
Try me on the
other side. Where the road is?
I'll just send an email. I've never heard of that.
You never been there? Please.
I've never heard of anybody doing these walks back there.
All right, thank you. All right, so we need to do Maruki.
Where are they going?
Okay.
Where are they going?
This is ordinance number 1122-18, an ordinance by the Township of Clinton. Folks, could you take the conversation aside? We got to
wrap it up.
Yeah. I don't mean to be impolite.
You can go out for a second.
That's okay, sir.
All right. This is an ordinance by the Township of...
Excuse us.
All right. Ordinance 1122-18, an ordinance by the Township of Clinton amending Chapter 165 of the Code of the Township of Clinton to revise the regulations applicable in the AH5 Affordable Housing District, comprising a portion of the Marukian property on Route 31. This is a project that has received preliminary approval by the Planning Board and has applied for financing, and there are some corrections and changes to be made. Among them, what the Planning Board had. It's a long night. Planning Board consistency review revealed no changes required. They had no comments, so that's all good. And the changes incorporated into this particular ordinance arise as part of changes that were negotiated with other affordable housing developments, and, for instance, a half-inch smaller tree caliper for the required plantings, which reduces costs but also improves survivability. So in my view, compared to the overall zoning ordinance that this was approved under, these are relatively minor changes.
I agree.
All right. So I will open the public hearing. Are there any members of the public that wish to make comments on the Marukian project?
You're just saying because you're having so much fun.
You moved.
He's not allowed to say anything.
Hearing and seeing no one with comments, I'll close the public hearing and ask for a motion.
And before you do, Mayor, sorry to cut
please.
In.
Yeah.
Reading the first whereas clause, there are a number of typos that I need to correct. So could the motion please be to adopt the ordinance with typos corrected?
Absolutely.
I'll make a motion to adopt the ordinance with typos corrected.
Thank you.
Second.
Roll call.
Councilwoman Swift.
That's an mouthful.
Good.
Yes.
Councilman Kaczynowski?
Yes.
Councilman Malloy?
Yes. Yes.
No reports.
I'll move to pay the bills.
I forgot. Brian, you are really good at keeping on track.
Somebody's just trying to get out.
I'll second that.
I understand. Roll call.
Councilwoman Swift.
Yes.
Councilman Kaczynowski?
Yes.
Councilman Malloy?
Yes.
Mayor Higgins?
Yes. I trust no members of the public have comments in the second public comment period. Thank you. And
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed or abstained?
Everybody go home.
Okay. Mayor?